This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kuser. It's hurricane season, and this year experts at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, predict there could be as many as 20 named storms, and about half of those could become hurricanes before the season ends in November. Last year was record-breaking with nearly 30 named storms and 12 making landfall. So what can we here on the North Atlantic coast expect based on history and predictions? Joining me now is Joe Chaffee. He's been forecasting the weather as a meteorologist for more than 40 years. You may have seen him on TV, Channel 11, WPIX, News 12, also News Fios 1. And right now he joins us on Skype. Joe Chaffee, hello. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. And don't forget News 12.
And News 12. That's right, News 12. Well, I mentioned, and you've brought up News 12, too. You've tracked weather for quite some time. How far back?
Well, I mean, if you count my time in high school, so we're probably going back to 1973. So so we're talking a good 47 years. Professionally, for 42 years now. So it's gone quickly, I must say. Mm. And I don't quite have the recall that I used to do, used to have with respect to individual events that have occurred. Other than that, it's been a lot. I've seen a lot. I still think I learn new things every day when it comes to meteorology, because just when you think you have it all figured out, nature does have a tendency to throw you a curveball here and there.
You've got your own webpage. You offer a number of ways that people can get their weather updates, podcasts, daily forecasts, a YouTube channel. I believe,
yes,
as well. That's a lot of
a
weather.
A nightly show also. the Joe and Joe Weather Show. Shameless self-promotion, I know. But we're on every night.
Many ways for people to get a look at what's happening. So I'm wondering, you're in a position to have been in touch with, you know, viewers and listeners and website users for a long time. Do a lot of people still watch for weather information, and do they watch closely, do you think?
There's a practice that most people do, and avid weather people do. It's called forecast shopping. Mm. And what they do, one of the things I learned early on was the folks that follow weather love it, and they absorb information from everywhere. And there's pluses and minuses to that, but they are rabid consumers of weather information wherever they can get it. And you know, some of the weather folks that follow are they're big on storms, and to put it frankly, they like to see them. I don't know that most people do, but they do like to see them and follow them and chase them and plot them and. The more information of weather that's out there, the more they consume. And it's been wonderful for me, the entire movement of weather onto the internet and all these other various platforms has really opened up an audience, a large audience in all, you know, everywhere. I have people watching from the North Slope of Alaska on a nightly basis. Occasionally I'll get some viewers from Australia. I'm loving it. My one regret is that I wish I had been born maybe 20 or 30 years later, because we didn't have this when I started out, obviously.
Let's talk about last year's hurricane season for a moment, if we could. It was a tough one on Long Island, even though none of the actual hurricanes, the many hurricanes that were named, actually landed here. And NOAA's predicting a pretty active season this year as well. What do you think that means for Long Island?
Well, Isaias, the tropical storm that moved up the coast and inland, it interacted with a strong upper trough, or if you want to look at it as an energy that came down in the normal, let's put it at that in quotes, the normal part of the jet stream out of Canada, kind of picked it up, juiced it up in a way that cyclones usually do in the wintertime. And as a result, we had that, it was basically 6 hours, because it was moving so fast, systems like that, if you look in the back over the years in history, we get a lot of systems that behave in that fashion, where they don't directly, when we say a direct hit, we refer to the center of the storm actually moving onshore from an offshore position. And we do get those clearly from time to time, but a majority of them go inland elsewhere. And if they go in east of the Appalachians or up the coastal plain, they can maintain a lot of their strength. And if they start to accelerate, that adds the wind element to the equation. Because if you have a storm that's racing at 40 or 50 miles an hour, that's adding to the momentum. And on the eastern side, which is where Long Island would be, you have to add that factor, how fast the storm is moving, to the expected forecast winds. And that's when you can get wind gusts of 70, 80, 90, 100 miles an hour. Those are a little bit more typical. The direct hit storms that come out of the Atlantic and turn up the coast, those are rarer events. But when they happen, like they did in the 38 hurricane, they can be, you know, extremely destructive. Hurricane Sandy was a hurricane that took the path that was quite destructive, especially when it came to coastal flooding, and that ultimately evolved into a hybrid type storm. But, you know, that's all the technical stuff. At the end of the day, it's really about, well, what's this going to do to me? What do you expect in terms of the day-to-day damage? Long Island is a tough place to forecast for because of so many the microclimates that exist here. And when it comes to tropical storms, we kind of stick out there. So you have to get an almost perfect setup to bring a hurricane up the East Coast. And does it happen every year? No. Does it happen every 10 years? I think the average is probably one storm every 7 or 8 years that makes a track right up the eastern seaboard and goes right over Long Island. And we're kind of due for something like that.
You've mentioned it's been 40 plus years tracking storms as a meteorologist. Have the basic weather patterns, have they changed generally on Long Island over the years that you've been tracking the weather?
Well, a couple of things have occurred in the last 50 years. One of the interesting things for me, because I'm a deep down inside, I'm a snow lover, and you know I would fall into the category of being a snow weenie, but that does not impact my forecasting, which I'm always able, you know, I'm able to set that aside and look at everything objectively, which is what you're supposed to do. One of the things that's happened, and of course this all comes wrapped in the climate change conversation. One of the things that has happened in the last 50 years is that from 1970 to the year 2000, there was a cyclical decline in annual snowfall. That has now been completely reversed. In the last 20 years, the snowfall averages on Long Island, and you do get years where you don't get much, but then that's more than compensated by the years where you get a lot. And we've seen the average snowfall actually rise from say 1970 to the year 2000, the average Long Island snowfall was somewhere on the order of about 20 to 25 inches. The average snowfall in the last 20 years has been over 40 inches. So that's a significant, that is a 75% increase. Now, if you average that out over the longer term averages, it works out that you divide that, add them together and divide it by two, and you're kind of right where the long-term average is. So that's one change. As far as tropical storms and hurricanes are concerned, it's very interesting. We've seen the number of storms per year increase quite a bit. For the normals, for example, when I started out in the 70s and 80s, the normal, you average in the Atlantic Basin 10 tropical cyclones and 6 hurricanes. Then every 10 years, they drop 10 years and then they add the next 10. Mm-hmm. So then the average worked up from 1980 to 2010. The average went up to 12 tropical cyclones, 6 hurricanes. Then now in the new normals of the last 30 years, we're up to 14 tropical cyclones, 7 hurricanes. The one interesting thing from all those numbers is the number 3. And the number 3 is major hurricanes. And in that stretch from 1960 to the year 2020, the average number of major hurricanes, category three or higher, has remained constant. It's at three. Hmm. And that's a very interesting, that number has not really changed very much. The other thing I would say with respect to the increase in numbers, there's also been an increase in the technology, especially before the satellite era. There probably were a number of hurricanes and tropical storms that went unreported, they would form, maybe last a day or two, and then they fall apart. Or what's even apparently could be even more common, you get these very small storms. And now with the GO satellites that we have, especially the recent GO satellite upgrade, I mean, the detail on it and the amount of information that we get on it is just so massive that they're finding these smaller storms apparently happen more frequently than they realized. So you have to be careful when you look at the numbers and you say, okay, the number of tropical cyclones in the Atlantic Basin has gone substantially higher. But we didn't really have the technology back years ago. So the numbers from the earlier part of the century were probably higher than what's in the history books.
I'm speaking with Joe Chaffee, meteorologist, and as you might have guessed, about the weather, specifically weather connected with Long Island. I'm wondering if you've run into any folks who think that the forecasts about extreme weather patterns are exaggerated. We've heard from some people who say, it's all hyperbole, you know, it rarely happens, so it's just all big talk. Have you encountered that kind of skepticism, and how would you respond to that?
Well, I have encountered it, and this is one of the downsides with respect to, let's call it the democratization of weather on the internet, where you can gather all this information. There are those who use common weather events and take those weather events and take them out to their natural Armageddon conclusion. One of the things I've always told folks is that when you one of the downsides of predicting the end of the world is that you can only be right once. And the thing is, broadcasters, professionals, we're kind of up against it a little bit, where we're trying to disseminate the right information, and you have the pushback coming in the other direction from trying to fight information that's saying that, oh, this storm is going to be the worst storm ever, and on it goes. And I mean, I know from my own self, you know, I've always approached weather with a very methodical, you know, look at what's going on, look at what the models are saying, and you basically tell it like it is. If it's, you know, there are times when storms are going to be strong to extreme, and you want to be able to say that and have the credibility behind it in order to, know that the person on the other side consuming that information says, you know, oh, Chaffee's saying this. Well, he doesn't do this sort of stuff where he hypes things. So if he's saying that there's an issue here, we might want to pay attention. There is an upside to it, is because if people know that the information you're putting out is good information and factual, they're going to keep coming back for you. And I just try to do that. And I have fun, you know, at the same time, which is even better.
And so basically, from your experience, what you're saying is, when it comes to what people want to know about hurricane season, it's just the basic facts. What should we prepare for?
Yeah, and I would just add, by the way, I just would add one other issue, is the fact that the consumer of the information needs to read it carefully, listen to it carefully. I have found over the years that you can put out a forecast, but people will only focus on certain key words that they'll pick up. And by the time it's all over, your forecast is completely misinterpreted. But that being said, now it's with respect to this hurricane season, trying to figure out whether one particular hurricane season is going to impact one particular area versus another, I've always thought that's been a bit of a fool's errand. But I'm not a long range forecaster. That's not really been my thing, because I've never been able to get my head around it. I will say that there are a couple of things going on that I think we can say in general. It is going to be another above average season. So I think we could look forward to taking out that 14 number at the top of total tropical cyclones. Last year was an incredible season with over 30 named storms, but a few in there that you could probably look back and say, were these really tropical systems or not? But that's a technical thing. I would say the fact that we have we still have a bit of a La Nina in the Pacific, colder than normal water temperatures in the equatorial Pacific, that tends to favor a light upper air wind environment in the Atlantic. Those are conditions that tropical cyclones can thrive in. I think we're going to have, in proportion to the number of tropical storms, will be an above normal number of hurricanes in that mix. And I would suspect that there probably will, a couple of those are going to wind up being majors. Now, whether they are going to be East Coast hurricanes, or whether they're going to be Gulf of Mexico hurricanes, or the other possibility is, and it's probably more often than not, that most of the Atlantic hurricanes never make it to shoreline. But I definitely would lean on the idea that it is going to be an active season. And the other thing I would say is that will be relevant, at least for now, we've had this tendency for the jet stream in Canada to dip down into the eastern part of the United States. We're seeing that happening today, for example, or at least just enough of it to bring down the humidity and put an end to the heat. If the jet stream continues to persist during the summer months and into the fall, where it continues to want to come down out of Canada and carve out a trough in the east, where the winds along the east coast in the upper atmosphere are from the south, that would increase the probability of a storm trying to track up the Atlantic seaboard. I'm a firm believer of the trend is your friend, so that persistence of that jet stream coming down, if that continues through the summer months, that could prove problematic when the hurricane season really gets going.
Joe Chaffee, we'll keep an eye on your internet offerings for weather to find out what will be happening this hurricane season. And thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I'm here all the time. You can feel free to call on me whenever you'd like.
We most likely will. Joe Chaffee is an Emmy Award-winning meteorologist who has spent the last 40-plus years forecasting for the New York City and Long Island area. Tropical storm Isaias battered Long Island when it swept through our region last year. Toppled trees blocked hundreds of roads, 400,000 homes and businesses lost power, and the LIRR had to suspend service when that storm hit. And that was just one tropical storm. Is Long Island ready for another Isaias, or maybe even worse? Patrick Beckley is the Deputy Commissioner for Suffolk County Fire Rescue and Emergency Services, and he joins us on the phone to talk about that. Deputy Commissioner, welcome to the full story.
Thank you, sir. I'm happy to be here.
How would you describe the hurricane season last year, maybe in comparison to others?
Well, I think last year's season was above average, and what also complicated that was the pandemic that was taking place as well. Mm-hmm. So we had multiple things going on at once.
And when it came to Tropical Storm Isaias, is that the kind of storm that you can anticipate in advance in terms of severity and the kind of damage that it would leave? I guess I'm asking, were you prepared for something that's severe?
Oh, without a doubt. I think since Hurricane Sandy, we've been on a track upward to be ever more prepared each progressive year. So whether it's Isaias or another storm, we're going to be ready for it.
And you mentioned the challenges of having to deal with storms in the middle of a pandemic. What kind of things were complicated by the pandemic when it came to being ready for the storms and then dealing with them when they hit?
Well, you know, your resources are stretched thin. People are responding to COVID and working long hours, handing out personal protective equipment. I wouldn't say we weren't prepared for Isaias. I think we were. It just takes those types of things, stretch your resources kind of thin at times. But everybody in this in this county and as well as emergency management are always prepared, even on days like today where it's beautiful out right now. At a moment's notice, the weather can change, especially on the Suffolk County part of Long Island. We're more prone to high winds, straight line wind effects like that storm. So we're always prepared.
You've got me glancing out the window now to make sure that nice sunny day isn't going away. You mentioned that you prepare from year to year for storms that are coming. How do you adjust your preparation when it comes to anticipating what's coming up or looking forward to the next year? Is there sort of a baseline that is consistent and then you have to make adjustments? How does that work so that you are prepared as you were for a storm the size of Isaias?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, you don't want to become complacent. You don't want to become comfortable with what you've done to that point. You always have to think ahead, look ahead, kind of have a crystal ball. And so the first thing that we look at is the National Hurricane Forecast and to see what they're calling for in terms of what kind of season we're going to have. And again, this year, it looks like we're going to have an above average season. So what we have done specifically for this year is we talked to our neighbors next door at Nassau County, and yesterday we did a joint field exercise with them. We brought our equipment that we've obtained since Hurricane Sandy, and they brought some of their equipment. One of their unique features, Nassau County has a small solar power generator, which is really, really a neat thing that they have. And we went over it, and we looked for ways on how that their resources and our resources can help each other if they're impacted more heavily from a storm than we are, and vice versa. So we're building those partnerships. And what we're going to do going forward is we're going to call all the players to the table and do a coastal storm meeting and just shake hands and talk and see who the new faces are in the room. I'm in a new position as deputy commissioner now for Suffolk County, but my previous job was regional director for the state of New York. So I kind of want to make sure we all know who we have to call when things go bad and build those relationships now. So when things do go bad, I'm not introducing myself to somebody for the first time.
And the players, can you run down briefly who the team is that hope to pull together for that Get Acquainted meeting?
Yes. So traditionally it's going to be, you know, our emergency management staff here at the county as well as the towns. And then key players would be our partners at PSE&G, National Grid. Probably Suffolk County Water Authority would also be invited to that meeting too. And agencies like that. New York State DOT, Suffolk County DPW, because those people are the ones that really are going to help clear our roads after a big disaster, those trees, and make sure that we can get to the hospitals and get to the police departments and the firehouses. So they're all important. They all play key roles. And some of them are new in their jobs, and they may have gotten that turnover and they may not have. So just make sure we're all on the same page.
And it must be difficult also planning when it's so hard to tell how long power might be out and how widespread a power outage might be after a storm.
You're exactly right. I mean, I think in prior to Sandy, the rule of thumb was you can expect to be without power for up to 7 days. And now I believe after Sandy, that's changed. And we tell our citizens that, you know, be prepared to be without power for at least 10 days. And also we help them by doing outreach events, you know, put their go kits together. This is what's important for you to have. But at the end of the day, you can always add to that. You know, if you have special medications you need to take, that's something you want to think ahead about and talk to your doctor about having a stockpile of some of those key medications so you don't have to rely on first responders who might be busy responding to the event and may not get there when they should or when you need them.
You've touched on preparedness, so why don't we go there? What do you advise, generally speaking, Suffolk County residents to do in preparation for this season?
Well, you know, one of the things County Executive Ballone and Commissioner Jordan want me to make clear to our residents is that there's many ways to get information. And information during these events or even during a pandemic is key. So, you know, Suffolk County created this RAVE notification system, and it's a high-speed notification service that allows us, Fire, Rescue, and Emergency Services, to deliver customized, important public safety messages directly to Suffolk County residents. So if, you know, if residents in Suffolk County want to be part of that and want to get those important messages, they can text Suffolk Alerts, that's one word, to 67283. That's Suffolk Alerts to 67283. Or they can go through the SuffolkCountyNY.gov website and sign up through our portal. And we actually urge our residents to do that, as well as another service which we feature, which is Smart 911. And what makes Smart 911 so beautiful is that, let's think outside of the natural disaster or the pandemic and just everyday life. If I'm a resident and I want my fire department to know that I have a person that's disabled that lives in my home, or I have three pets, and then God forbid if a fire should strike my home, those first responders will get that information. Our dispatchers will have that at their fingertips and pass that along to the fire chief and his crews. So when they get to your house, they know that they're going to be looking for or looking to assist someone who's going to be disabled, which they might require an additional staffing on the fire department's part. Or they know that they're going to be looking for three animals or four animals or whatever your special circumstance is. That Smart 911 feature gives that to them. So that's very important.
One of the most dangerous aspects of a major storm, a hurricane, or a very strong tropical storm, the experts tell us, while the wind is certainly an issue, it's the storm surge, the high water. And with a place like the South Shore of Suffolk, that must be a big issue. And I'm thinking in terms also of rising sea levels now and in the future. Is that something you also have to look at? Is that another layer of preparation that perhaps you didn't have to look at so carefully before?
That's a great point. I think sometimes residents forget. The farther away we come from Sandy, I think residents will forget how bad it really was and how scared people got when they made the decision to stay when they should have left. And so we urge everybody to go to our Suffolk County website and find out what flood zone they're in. We have that information available on our SuffolkCountyNY.gov website under our OEM page. They can go and find out if they live in a flood zone. But, you know, you bring up a great point. It's really not the winds that kill, it's the water. The water kills. And I got to say, the National Hurricane Center has done a great job since Hurricane Sandy on learning how to communicate to the public. Because they used to give us a lot of different scientific numbers to figure out where the water was going to be, and they broke it down to very layman's terms. So now when you read that it's going to be 10 feet, they're talking 10 feet above dirt. That's how high the water is going to be. And that gives people a visual, right? It's easy to communicate. People understand that. And hopefully they'll heed to the message when we call for them to voluntarily evacuate or to mandatorily evacuate. Hopefully they will listen to those calls, because it is water that kills.
Well, hopefully we won't need to employ all of your preparedness for the hurricane season, but knowing that things are ready to go is certainly a comfort. Deputy Commissioner, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me today, sir. Be safe.
And you too. Patrick Beckley is Deputy Commissioner for Suffolk County Fire, Rescue, and Emergency Services. If the future of our region holds more destructive storms, how can cities and towns prepare for more severe natural disasters? It's a problem that Rick Fontana has to manage. He's the director of the Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security in New Haven. Mr. Fontana, welcome back to The Full Story.
Good afternoon. Good to see you.
It was just about 2 years ago we spoke with you on this program about hurricane preparedness. Then there was this last year, which was unusual in many respects, including weather for some parts of the country. Was last year's season unusual for New Haven, or just another busy time of the year in the summer?
Well, you know, last year was a little bit different for us because we did have a major storm. And you know, we're it's not that we're used to having, you know, major, whether it be a tropical storm, whether it be, you know, as we saw during Irene and Sandy, which was a superstorm. But again, we had another storm last year that created a lot of, it wreaked a lot of havoc on the city, as well as around the greater New Haven area, and other towns were impacted by the loss of power, which is so, you know, that's usually our biggest issue. The loss of power creates so many issues for us during storms.
So in preparing for storms and getting ready for a storm season, the hurricane season in this case, what information do you access? What do you use to make those preparations? Where do you get that information?
Yeah, we actually use hurricane software. It's called HurriPlan. And it's provided to us through the federal government, through FEMA. But we also use the National Weather Service. Mm-hmm. We use NOAA. We use a lot of our mapping tools. And again, the one good thing about, you know, hurricane preparedness is it's one of those things where we have a little bit of time to prepare for an actual hit. Now we have emergency operation plans that are in place. We work with our, you know, our fire department, police department, public works folks on a day-to-day basis preparing for if a storm hits. But as we start to get closer and then we get the alert that a storm is moving, you know, out of the Caribbean and coming up our way, we've got 5, 6, 7 days to plan. Those are critical, but sometimes, you know, planning is key, but also making sure people are out of harm's way, because Mother Nature doesn't really care if what it's going to destruct. It just happens.
Those general preparations that you make with other city departments, for example, do those vary from year to year, or are they fairly constant? And then when you know what type of storm is coming and when, that's when the more specific plans get put into place?
Yeah, that's a great question. What we've typically done is prepared for a worst case scenario.
Ah, I see.
And then for us, as I've always said, it's easier to scale back than it is to scale up during those 24 hours before the storm. So it's a lot easier to just really, you know, scale up for us, prepare for the worst, and, you know, and hope for the best. That's what we do in New Haven. It's worked for us. It's just a lot of coordination between city departments, a lot of coordination between external stakeholders. We work very closely with the UI, who is responsible for power. That seems to be the greatest risk, the loss of power. And then again, that storm surge and flooding, those just keep us, you know, it keeps me awake at night sometimes thinking about making sure that this city is prepared should we get a Category 1 or 2 hurricane.
As I mentioned before, you were on the show just about 2 years ago talking about being prepared for storms. At that time, you said New Haven was very lucky because there was a storm that nearly went over the breakers farther west along the Connecticut coast in Stamford. We have a clip from that show.
We were one foot away from disaster, where we ran out of space for our boat docks, where those would have broke free just like they did in New York and New Jersey. At that point, we would have had water in areas that were going to be difficult to get out. And again, having some coastal resiliency, you know, and protecting infrastructure and building of those walls is so, so key. I could tell you when I was a kid, I used to look at the beach, and we had about a 300-foot beach over off of Beach Street in West Haven. That beach now is about 50 feet.
Again, that was your comment from a couple of years ago. Just reminding listeners, we're talking with Rick Fontana, the director of the Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security in the city of New Haven. That comment that you made a couple of years ago about that storm, it illustrates, it seems, that conditions can really vary from place to place along the coast during a single storm.
Yeah, and that's you know, that's the case. As you know, when we look at high tide, you know, the goal, if we could predict or ask a storm to hit at a certain time, we'd want that storm to hit at low tide. And unfortunately, depending on where you are in the state, the tidal changes are quite different. They could be an hour and a half to a 2 hour difference. Based on the length of travel that you go. Again, at 6 feet difference at low tide, which is a 6 hour window. But again, you know, in the state, you know, you've got about an hour, and I believe it's just over an hour of time difference. So at peak high tide, and we do get, you know, the eye of the storm that could come in, could cause a lot more devastation. That foot difference could mean a lot, believe it or not. When we looked at Superstorm Sandy, when at the height of the storm, we had less than a foot before all of the boats were off of the pilings. So could have been catastrophic in New Haven, but it was catastrophic in New York and down in the western part of the state. So again, you'll want very similar to Hurricane Gloria, you'd want, you know, that storm to hit at low tide, because that variable, that 6 foot variable, could mean life or death.
I lived a block or two from the beach when Gloria hit, so I know what you mean. How closely or do you coordinate closely with other emergency departments in towns up and down the coast when you know a storm is on the way?
Yeah, we all talk. And again, I collaborate, communicate closely with our friends down in Bridgeport. There are, you know, we tend to talk with the bigger communities, mm-hmm. Because they have emergency managers that are full time and on staff. But one of the towns that we work very closely with the towns that are contiguous to New Haven. So, you know, the West Haven, the East Haven. And look, you know, when during Irene and Sandy, you know, East Haven, you know, again, just to the east of us, had a lot more damage than we did. We actually released resources to East Haven because they needed them in Cozy Beach more than we needed them along the Morris Cove area, because it hit that tip of what we call New Haven, by Lighthouse Point, with a lot more of vengeance than it did on the Morris Cove side, more facing west than facing southeast.
What are you expecting for this season for New Haven? Any specific information that is piquing your interest more than it might have in the past?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, based on the forecast that we've been seeing, is it looks like to be a more an active hurricane season. Last year we ran out of named hurricanes, so it was a little bit different, named storms. This year is going to be pretty active. We really, I always say the three-step plan. Everyone should make a plan. So that means make an evacuation plan, know where you're going to go, know who you're going to tell where you're going, have a kit, make sure that you have, you know, those basic supplies. And some people wait to get those basic supplies a day before the storm's coming, and the shelves are empty on the supermarket, the batteries over at Home Depot are gone or at your hardware store, and stay informed. And I say those three steps: make a plan, build a kit, stay informed. And I say stay informed, make sure that you have the local alerts that come to you from your town or city. They're the experienced individuals. They're the ones that are getting the information, and those are the ones that could give you life-saving information. And if they're telling you, that you need to evacuate, you need to evacuate, because we just, again, storms don't, they don't care when they're coming. It could be during the nighttime hours, could be during the daytime hours. And the last thing we want to do is be rescuing folks that could have gotten out in time, especially those vulnerable populations. But make a plan, build a kit, stay informed.
Sharing that information with us is certainly one way to inform the public about how they can ensure their personal safety during a storm. What are the other ways that you try to educate people about what to do in advance of a storm?
You know, in advance of a storm, for us, we tell people to make sure that those easily things that are accomplished, that, you know, bringing in your gas grill that has a propane tank on it, you know, make sure that your downspouts are clear, you know, make sure that, you know, you make sure that you have all your insurance papers all in one area. And again, it's all about communications. And we tell people, make sure that you're communicating with your family, make sure that people know that you have a plan. And again, preparedness is probably the number one thing that folks can do to be safe. And again, the preparedness starts now, right? June 1st is when hurricane season begins in Connecticut, and it goes until November 30th. So if people can prepare, look, our one of our most important tools is a cell phone. And without that being charged, you lose all of your communication, because we don't even have a phone number for some of our friends because they're in our cell phone. If that dies, that's probably one of the most important pieces. Make sure that you have a good battery charger, one of those ones that you pay $35 or $40 for that can charge your cell phone up to 6 times before needing a charge. That's a great investment. Water, canned food, making sure that you have your papers in place. And look, everything you do now to prepare for a storm is going to make you and your family a whole lot safer. Know that we're there. Know that if you are in trouble, we've got the talented staff that will be there to ensure the safety of all of the residents, not only in New Haven, but, you know, there's so many communities who work so hard in preparedness around hurricanes. Those coastal communities are always preparing.
What are the ways that you get this information that you've just shared with us? What are the ways that it gets to the members of the community, to neighborhoods? Is it through churches or other kinds of community groups? How is the information dispersed so it gets as wide a play as possible?
Well, one of the widest plays that we see is our media friends, as we're talking about now. You know, so media has really helped get messaging out. We have our management teams throughout the city of New Haven that are associated with our police substations, and then we have Medical Reserve Corps and CERT teams that try to get information out. But again, I think the most important thing is we find that if we tell people, look, if you can, you know, most everyone has a computer. I tell people ready.gov. And if you could go to ready.gov/hurricanes, you'll have everything that we've talked about and at your fingertips. So if you know that a hurricane is coming, and again, you know, it could start off as a hurricane. We don't need a hurricane. We know the tropical storms can do a whole lot of damage. We saw it in Isaias. We saw it in Tropical Storm Irene. We had $7 million of infrastructure damage during Superstorm Sandy. So, we've lost buildings. We've lost areas that keep water out of our vulnerable areas. When you're talking about New Haven Harbor, remember, we have tank farms there. The New Haven train station is close. Those are all in flooding areas. But we'll just say to everybody, plan now. We tell those folks too, the better you can to have some resilience in your property, if you can, make sure the downspouts are cleared. As I said, move those items that could be a projectile. Those are simple things that you can do to prepare. Those are quick. I mean, again, our hope is this is all going to pass and we don't have a hurricane. But look, let's take the time now to prepare. We'll reach out through as many groups as we can. But ready.gov gives you great information. Your church will give you great information as well. And the media. Thank you for what you're doing. It's important.
Mr. Fontana, thank you so much for your time and information. Hopefully, as you said, it'll be a quiet season, but we need to be ready anyway. Again, thank you for your time and insights.
You're welcome.
Rick Fontana is the director of the Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security in New Haven. Next week, we'll speak with two scientists who study storms and climate change. They're dedicated to making sure the public gets solid information about severe weather events. That's next week on The Full Story. So, where do you get your weather news? Are you ready for hurricane season? Let us know. Let us know how you do that. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org, and we're on Twitter at @FullStoryWSHU. And that's our program for today, produced by Fatou Sangare and senior producer Ann Lopez. I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to The Full Story.